Our next guest on the program is the creator of the Pass the Pistol blog. She's the author of a couple of books, including Grow What You Love and her brand new one that is just terrific. It's called Grow Now, How We Can Save Our Health, Communities, and Planet, One Garden at a Time. We're happy to welcome in Emily Murphy. Emily, thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Rich. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's such a wonderful book. It's informative, and it's a beautiful book. The pictures are just outstanding as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I worked really hard to create a visual story along with the narrative of the how-to and the why-to that's described in the book.
Well, and the message is, among other things, that it's not just great, and it is, to be able to grow your own food, but it can also have an incredibly positive impact on our environment.
That's exactly right. So Grow Now is a book that looks at regenerative organics, how we can regrow our landscapes and our food system starting at home with a very simple set of principles for growing. And those regenerative principles are principles that are so old they seem new, and they're truly simple. It's applying compost to soil, feeding the soil with organic matter, essentially, and keeping living roots in the ground, growing perennials, taking a no-dig approach or disturbing the soil as little as possible to really preserve and protect that soil ecosystem, planting biodiversity for biodiversity and doing no harm, protecting wild places, and really looking at our landscapes and the places closest to home as these wonderful, empowering, potentially climate resilient landscapes that have the ability to buoy us up personally, to really offer each of us a lifeline to good health and a, you know, place to be with our families. I'm sure many of us remember the start of the pandemic. Boy, we were all turning to our gardens and the places closest to home pretty closely at the start of 2020, and I think that revived this interest in looking at our landscapes a little bit differently, which I was so grateful for. And I really try to encapsulate that. I wrote the book during 2020, and I feel like the challenges of that year made the book better. At least I hope, because I really wanted to provide readers, again using this word lifeline or a sense of hope through action, and I did my best to answer this larger question of how we can save our health, communities, and planet one garden at a time.
I was struck by your personal story that you share in the introduction of the book about your grandmother and searching for mushrooms and being out on the land with the trees that were planted by your great-grandfather. And it made me think about my family. I've got an 8-year-old son at home, and how important it is to pass this along to our kids for them to understand the role we can play in nurturing and preserving the environment, but also in getting them to understand where food comes from.
Absolutely, and they're so interconnected, aren't they? I think in our minds we sometimes try to separate where our food comes from nature, but really they can't be separated. And the healthier our environment, the healthier we are. The healthier the environments in which our food is grown, the healthier the food. And what a wonderful thing to learn from a young age. I feel like I was very fortunate to have those opportunities, as you mentioned, or those stories of my own childhood in the beginning of the book. But what a wonderful thing. And I'm sure your son appreciates those opportunities too. And if he doesn't articulate them now, I'm sure that as he grows older, he'll look back and realize, wow, I'm pretty lucky to spend time outside, whatever it is you enjoy doing. And I'm sure that gives him this lexicon or this language for really understanding his place in the world, giving him courage and confidence to try things, experiment, and maybe experience some failures, but maybe then he'll learn, like, I can overcome these things, or, you know, if I try this, maybe if I just do it a different way, or whatever it might be, if you're looking at growing some of your own food in the garden, give yourself courage to fail and try again. And I think you learn that sort of through osmosis when you're young, and take it with you, whether you realize it or not.
Well, and you talk about the fact that all of us as kids love playing in the dirt. Sometimes we get away from that, but it's not a bad thing to go back to that. Nurture your nature, as you put it, and get a little dirt on your hands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's something in the book I outline. I didn't coin it, but it's something that's out there that we don't talk about much. And it's the idea of your nature quotient. Mm. So we're all familiar with our IQ, our ability to reason. Emotional quotient is another measure of ability or understanding that many recognize. Your emotional quotient is your ability to work with others, collaborate, communicate, understand others. And your nature quotient is really your understanding of the natural world. And it can begin from a young age. It can begin at any age. And it doesn't mean you have to know every plant and animal species by a scientific name, but rather you take the time to pay attention and be curious. And what a gift. Cultivating your nature quotient. We never can really complete cultivating our nature quotient is also a tool for, again, seeing our food system, seeing how we grow food, growing better gardens, and approaching the landscape and also some really big, difficult world problems. And when we begin to solve some of those problems closer to home, we begin to understand maybe a little bit of what's necessary to solve some of these global issues like the climate crisis and loss of biodiversity. And it can all begin at home. I like to say that what is local is global. And what I do in my garden and my neighbor's garden, collectively, they add up to making a difference.
Well, and you outlined 15 easy ways to increase your nature quotient, and they're all relatively simple things that people of any age could do with a little bit of guidance.
Mm, absolutely. And I'm sure everyone can maybe begin, you know, any listeners right now might be thinking, oh, what could I do to increase my nature quotient? And they can be things as simple as keeping a bird book and binoculars by your kitchen window or your back door, or paying attention to the path of the sun, or is the moon in the sky during the day? And if so, at what angle, or what is the phase of the moon, or who's visiting my garden, or what birds are passing through? When are they migrating? Who is migrating and when, I should say? And what insects might be about? When do you see fireflies, for instance? And when do they come out? Could be any number of things. And you don't have to record those findings, but you could and collect them in a journal or just catalog them. And what I find too is that these are these small moments of joy that when we take time to pay attention, you know, every day can kind of feel like Groundhog Day a little bit, at least in my life since 2020 writing this book. And I've been so hard at work with this project. I've wanted so much for this book to do great things and truly give people the sense of what's possible. I put everything I could into it, and now it's just released. And while I'm so joyful and thankful for the opportunity, I also do feel like sometimes every day is Groundhog Day a little bit. Like, okay, keep going. And for me, it is these small things, such as those outlined in the book for increasing your nature quotient, that really provide those bright moments of aha moments or joy or just the simple things. I feel like it's the pennies in life that add up that really make a difference. And it's kind of what this is.
Emily Murphy with us here on Downtown. Her new book is called Grow Now. Emily, can you talk about the importance of healthy soil?
Yeah, good question. That healthy soil is at the core of this book. And I know it's a term that maybe any of your listeners who are avid gardeners, they've heard before. You know, we're not really feeding our plants, we're feeding the soil. What does that mean? And there's so many different ways to look at soil ecology. And I did my best to break down the importance of soil health and how we can embolden soil health and how that betters our lives and our gardens and everything we grow and also our communities and the greater environment. And soil health begins with feeding the soil, as I mentioned, applying compost to the soil or other mulches, disturbing it as little as possible, keeping living roots in the ground. And all of these practices really go back to something as simple as the carbon cycle. We're when we feed the soil organic matter, we're feeding the soil life. And carbon kind of has a bad rap because of all the carbon in the atmosphere. But it wasn't always, you know, in the abundance that is now in the atmosphere. Much of that carbon came from other sources, such as soil. And soil really is the building block of life. When scientists look for signs of life out in the atmosphere, for instance, they're looking for signs of carbon paired with water, because every living thing is based on carbon. That's the root of every living thing. And so when we think of carbon as being life and feeding our soil carbon, we're really feeding our soil life, and we're feeding those soil microbes and the soil ecology, all the organisms live in the soil, with this life. And when we do that, we give them the opportunity to thrive, and they then assist our plants, and they then also then interact with the biodiversity above soil. But what we're really doing is just trying to support biodiversity. And there's this amazing push and pull. There's or sometimes what I like to call a feed forward or feedback loop that happens between the biodiversity of soil and the biodiversity above ground. It's really quite amazing how they support one another. So when we look at biodiversity above ground and wanting to support butterflies and bees and all the wonderful wildlife that visits our yard, that also begins with soil health, because the biodiversity above ground can only be as healthy as the soil that plants are grown in. And it goes on and on. There's something else I talk about in the book about the biodiversity hypothesis, which that's a whole other conversation, but it really links our personal health as well to the health of soil and the health of plants and the health of the environment. And it shows us how, in scientific terms, why this is so. And so again, the soil of the health is also important to our own personal health.
And one of the benefits of the no-dig approach, as you point out, is that it ensures that carbon stored in the soil stays underground. What are some of the other benefits of no-dig?
Yeah. So that's a good point. I forgot that whole part about storing carbon underground. So that is one of the benefits. You're exactly right. So when we feed the soil carbon, we're shuttling carbon from above ground, underground. And it's the mycorrhizal fungi that really are helping assist in this process, which is why we want to encourage their biodiversity. 90 to 95% of plants form these mycorrhizal relationships. And what happens is carbon goes through the plant as a form of sugar because of the photosynthetic process. That is part of the carbon cycle. And it comes out of the roots, feeds those soil organisms. We put compost on the soil. We're moving carbon from above ground, underground, and these fungi then produce a substance, has a fancy name, it's called glomalin, kind of a sticky substance, and this is what helps form humus in the soil, and this is where stable carbon can be stored. And when we take a no-dig approach, disturb the soil as little as possible, we're fostering the soil ecosystem, but we're also ensuring that those stable carbon stores stay underground. And it can stay underground for hundreds of years, which is really remarkable. And when you think about it, this is how nature grows itself, right? Leaves fall from trees and litter the ground, and animals come and do their work, and other bits and twigs of things are also on the ground. And the only thing that's digging are the squirrels or the moles, and they're improving soil tilth, but only through their activities. And so with regenerative growing, with no-dig growing, we're doing our best to mimic nature.
I love the idea, too, of rethinking lawns, and you write about that. And I've never been a big lawn guy myself, and you say that could be an area that could really be a great spot to rethink how you use that land and how you make it more healthy for the environment and for the entire ecosystem, the birds, the bees, the butterflies, and other critters.
Absolutely. So when you take a bird's eye view of any neighborhood, whether it's yours or maybe a suburban area near your town center, you have to ask yourself, you know, where, if you were a chickadee or another bird, where would you land? Where would you make your home? And if it's all lawn, it doesn't give wildlife a lot of opportunity to set up shop and create habitat because there's no habitat to be found. And sometimes when you take the reverse view and you look at your yard or your front yard or your backyard or your side yard that might be lawn and you're wondering where to put a garden, it might be that the best place is to gobble up some of that lawn by covering it over with, again, organic matter, taking this no-dig approach, and covering it over with organic matter, layering it up rather than digging down and putting a garden right on top of it. And there are many ways to do this, and I know not everyone has a lawn or has a yard. Some people only have room for containers, but it's a really exciting thing to think about how lawns can be transformed into either food gardens, raised bed food gardens, or a combination of food gardens and plants for pollinators, native hedgerows, and some of the images I share in the book are just this. And while I'm based in Northern California, near the coast, I'm originally from a place where, very close to where the Ewok scenes were filmed in Star Wars. I have spent a lot of time in New England, in Maine and New Hampshire and Vermont and Massachusetts, and some of the gardens, many of the gardens photographed and grown out, are from New England. And one of them is a perennial food forest in Massachusetts, and there's flower farm in Vermont, and another garden in Massachusetts, none in Maine in particular, but they show how these yards and landscapes can be transformed into what we're just talking about, where you can transform your lawn into really incredible ecosystem for that betters the environment and for yourself as well.
So, Emily, for anybody who would like to begin making some positive changes, what's a relatively simple way to start?
A really simple way to start is to compost, honestly, or to apply compost to soil. So there's two benefits here. To make your own compost, or to at least ensure that your yard waste, your yard trimmings, your leaves, and your kitchen scraps get composted, whether you're composting them or you're taking them to a community compost center. That is incredibly important. There are millions of tons of yard trimmings and kitchen scraps that go to landfills every year. And when they go to the landfill, they produce methane, which is a greenhouse gas 28 times more potent than carbon dioxide, which is staggering. So just think, if you just did that one thing, how much that would be helping. And then the other thing that's helpful is to take any compost you make, or if you have a compost facility nearby, invest in putting compost back on your property. One of the areas of research I did before starting Grow Now was to ask, what is our ability to sequester carbon underground? Is this real? Is this possible? And how does it work if so? And I reached out to the team at UC Davis who were doing a study on just this, on carbon sequestration, and what are the factors involved for successful carbon sequestration through growing. And they looked at cover crops. They of course, were using no dig, no till. And what they found, though, was it wasn't until they introduced compost, and in their instance, it was a half an inch to an inch of compost over the soil surface that really began shuttling carbon from the atmosphere underground. I thought it was so interesting. And I talked to two of the writers of the paper after they had finished. It was a 20-year study, and they were looking at the ability to store carbon at depth. And they both said independently, because I talked to them separately, they both said independently, if homeowners were to do one thing, it would be spread compost over their entire yard, including their lawn, because it's this process that allows all of us to begin shuttling carbon from the atmosphere. I thought that was just so fascinating. It can be that simple.
Emily Murphy's new book is Grow Now, How We Can Save Our Health, Communities, and Planet, One Garden at a Time. Enjoyed the book so much and enjoyed talking with you about it. Emily, thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thanks so much, Rich. I really appreciate your time.
Emily Murphy here on Downtown.